Welcome to A Katra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Katra AI.
Welcome back. Today we're diving deep, really deep, into Charles Dickens's Great Expectations.
A giant of a novel.
Absolutely. It's all about ambition, class, shame, and that tough lesson that, well, money buys you fancy clothes, sure, but it definitely doesn't buy you character.
No, it doesn't. And this is Dickens, arguably at his most psychologically insightful.
Published back in the 1860s, serially first, right?
That's right. And it's such a cornerstone of Victorian lit because it taps into something timeless, that anxiety about status, about where you fit. So we're basically following the journey of Philip Pirrip and exploring Dickens' big question. What actually makes someone a gentleman? Is it just wealth and a title? Or is it something deeper? You know, integrity, loyalty,
right?
The things you do when nobody's watching.
And we should probably remember Dickens' own life here briefly. His family's financial struggles, his father in debtor's prison, that wasn't just background noise.
No, definitely not. It fuels the whole thing. It gives the novel this raw emotional power. It's not just a story. It's sharp social commentary born from experience.
And the book itself is a Bildungsroman, a coming-of-age story.
Yeah, but not always a pleasant one. It's about Pip's development, sure, but it's often painful, humiliating even. It's that journey from being young and idealistic, maybe a bit self-absorbed,
to reaching a kind of mature self-awareness, but getting there the hard way.
Exactly.
The hard way.
Okay, so let's get into it. It kicks off in this incredibly atmospheric setting, the Kent Marshes. Very bleak.
Oh, totally bleak, right in a churchyard, misty Christmas Eve of all times. And young Pip, who's an orphan living with his sister and her husband, well, he has this encounter.
The encounter that starts everything.
Yes. He stumbles upon Abel Magwitch, an escaped convict, terrifying chains and all.
And Magwitch doesn't ask politely?
No, he demands food and a file to get rid of his leg iron. And Pip, well, he's terrified. He's just a kid.
So he steals them from home from Mrs. Joe and Joe Gargery's place? He does. And that act, driven by pure fear, not really by kindness, it creates this invisible thread, this bond that ties him to Magwitch for life, even though he doesn't know it yet.
It plants those seeds of guilt, obligation, themes that run through the whole book. But fear isn't what drives his ambition, is it? That comes later.
Right. The real trigger for Pip wanting to climb the social ladder, that's shame. And that arrives courtesy of Satis House.
Ah, Satis House. Miss Havisham's domain. Talk about gothic.
It really is. Like time stopped dead. Miss Havisham in her decaying wedding dress, the clock stopped. She's been jilted years ago and is just stewing in it.
And using her adopted daughter, Estella, as a weapon.
Precisely. To get revenge on all men, basically. Pip is invited there just to play. It's not really play. He's there to be a practice target for Estella's cruelty.
And Estella, beautiful, but ice cold.
Completely. And she delivers these lines that just devastate young Pip. She mocks his background, calls his hands coarse, his boots thick.
And that's the spark.
That's it. That contempt ignites this this burning sense of social shame, as Dickens puts it. Suddenly, everything about his life, the forge, Joe, his home, feels common, feels wrong.
He starts confusing being upper class with being happy or even being good instantly. And this desperate ambition takes root. He has to become a gentleman. Why? To be worthy of Estella. He completely misses what real worth might be. Which brings us perfectly to Joe Gargery, Pip's brother-in-law, the blacksmith.
Yo.
Yeah.
He's the heart of the novel, really. The moral compass.
Simple, uneducated in the formal sense, but just fundamentally good.
Absolutely. He embodies unconditional love, humility, integrity. He is true gentility without any of the trappings. His love for Pip is unwavering, which makes Pip's later snobbery even harder to read.
Doesn't Joe try to warn Pip in his simple way?
There's that great line where Joe tells him, "Lies is lies. Howsoever they come, they didn't ought to come. That ain't the way to get out of being common, old chap."
But Pip doesn't listen. Not really. Then comes the big news.
Yeah, the arrival of Mr. Jaggers, the imposing London lawyer.
With the announcement, Pip has great expectations. An anonymous benefactor is setting him up.
And Pip jumps to the conclusion immediately.
It must be Miss Havisham preparing him for Estella.
Exactly. So he leaves the forge, leaves Joe, leaves Biddy, the kind girl who helps around the house and school him. He's off to London to become a gentleman.
And in London, well, he gets the surface right, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. The fine clothes, the expensive habits, learning etiquette, running up debts. He gets the superficial stuff down pat.
Morally.
It's a disaster, frankly. He becomes incredibly snobbish, ashamed of his roots. When Joe comes to visit, Pip is embarrassed by him, patronizing. It's a real low point.
He trades his real connections for this illusion of status. It is painful to read.
It really is.
Let's touch on Miss Havisham again. She's such a potent symbol, this arrested development, this living decay. She is. And her whole purpose, warped as it is clear. Use Estella to break hearts as hers was broken. But even she has an arc, doesn't she? Towards the end, there's this dawning horror at what she's done, right? That realization, begging Pip for forgiveness just before her accident with the fire, which almost feels like this horrific symbolic cleansing.
And Estella, she's a victim too, in her own way, raised to be incapable of love.
But she's honest about it, at least with Pip. She tells him flat out.
She does. I have no heart, no sympathy sentiment nonsense, she warns him repeatedly. But Pip doesn't want to hear it. He's projecting his own desires onto her. He wants her to be the prize at the end of his gentlemanly quest.
Okay, so Pip's in London, racking up debt, chasing this impossible dream with Estella, who then goes and marries the absolute brute, Bentley Drummle.
Yeah, Drummle. All status, zero substance. A truly unpleasant character. And Pip is about 23 now. Things are looking pretty shaky.
Yeah.
And then comes the knock at the door.
The moment the whole illusion shatters.
Completely. Stormy night, Pip's alone in his rooms. And this rough, older man walks in. Weather-beaten, coarse.
And it slowly dawns on Pip.
It's Magwitch, the convict from the marshes all those years ago.
And the reason he's there.
To reveal the truth. He is Pip's secret benefactor. He tells Pip, with this fierce pride and affection, that he dedicated his life, working incredibly hard in exile in Australia, to make his boy, the boy who helped him, into a gentleman.
Wow, just imagine that shock. Pip's entire identity built on this fantasy of genteel patronage from Miss Havisham.
It just dissolves. The money isn't from aristocracy, it's from a transported criminal. The greatness is rooted in crime and hardship, not elegance.
His revulsion must have been immense.
Initially, yes. Mm. Pure horror and class prejudice. But this is where Pip's real transformation begins. That revulsion starts to morph into something else.
Duty.
Duty, definitely. But then, surprisingly, into genuine care. He starts to see Magwitch not just as a source of tainted money, but as a person. A vulnerable, loyal, almost paternal figure.
And the plot thickens even more, doesn't it? The connections start clicking into place.
Oh, Dickens weaves it all together brilliantly. It turns out Magwitch's old partner in crime, the smoother, more dangerous convict Tim Payson,
was the very man who jilted Miss Havisham all those years ago.
Exactly. And the biggest bombshell?
Estella.
Estella. Cold, refined Estella, raised to break hearts, is the daughter of Magwitch, the convict, and Molly, Mr. Jagger's fiercely protective housekeeper, who herself has a hidden violent past.
So the two worlds Pip tried to keep separate, the rough world of the marshes and the crime it represented, and the supposedly refined world of Satis House and London society, they're inextricably linked.
Tangled together by the same threads of crime, betrayal, and hidden parentage, it just demolishes the idea that these social barriers Pip cared so much about are real or meaningful.
So Pip now knows the truth. He feels this duty towards Magwitch. What happens next?
Well, Pip tries to help Magwitch escape England, because Count Basin is hunting him, and he'd be hanged if caught. There's this dramatic chase scene on the River Thames.
High stakes.
Very. It ends tragically. Count Basin drowns in a struggle with Magwitch, but Magwitch is badly injured and captured by the authorities.
And the consequences for Pip.
Since Magwitch is a convicted felon, all his property, all that wealth he'd amassed, it's forfeited to the crown. Pip's great expectations are gone. Poof. Just like that.
So he loses the money, but gains something else.
Absolutely. This is Pip's lowest point financially, but arguably his highest point morally. He doesn't have abandoned Magwitch. He stays by his side in the prison infirmary.
He finally sees the man's true worth.
He does. He recognizes Magwitch's essential goodness, his loyalty, his sacrifice. And in Magwitch's final moments, Pip gives him a gift.
He tells him about Estella.
Yes. He tells the dying Magwitch that his daughter is alive, that she's beautiful, and that Pip loves her. It allows Magwitch to die with a sense of peace, knowing his sacrifice wasn't entirely in vain. Pip chose human connection over status.
A profound moment. But Pip's own troubles aren't over.
Not at all. After Magwitch dies, Pip falls seriously ill. He's got fever, he's deep in debt, completely ruined.
And who comes to rescue him?
Who else? Joe. Good, simple, ever faithful Joe. He nurses Pip back to health with that same unconditional love he always showed him.
That must have been incredibly humbling for Pip.
Completely. Lying there, helpless, being cared for by the man he'd become so ashamed of. It forces him to confront the depth of his own snobbery and the incredible value of Joe's genuine kindness. He finally understands what true gentility means. It's Joe.
So he recovers. He wants to make amends, right? He even thinks about proposing to Biddy.
He does. He goes back to the forge, humbled, ready to try and rebuild his life there, maybe marry Biddy, only to find out that Joe and Biddy have found happiness together. They're married.
A bittersweet moment, I suppose.
Yeah. He accepts it, though. He seeks their forgiveness, which they freely give, and then he decides he needs to make his own way, honestly. He goes abroad, works hard with his friend Herbert Pocket for 11 years.
And then he comes back, which leads to the ending.
Yes, the famous ending. He visits the ruins of Saddest House Nature, reclaiming the place of stagnation, and he finds Estella there.
Also changed.
Very much so. She's a widow now. Her marriage to the abusive Drummel, who died in an accident, has clearly taken its toll, but it's also softened her, made her capable of feeling.
She says something profound, doesn't she, about suffering?
She does. It's one of the key lines, really. She says to Pip, "Suffering has been stronger than all other teaching and has taught me to understand what your heart used to be. I have been bent and broken, but I hope into a better shape."
Wow. So suffering gave her the empathy she was denied in her upbringing.
Exactly. And the novel ends with them walking out of the ruined garden hand in hand. Pip says he sees no shadow of another parting from her.
It's famously ambiguous. Did Dickens mean they'd marry? Or just that they'd found a connection based on shared pain and growth?
Scholars debated. He actually wrote two endings. The original was less hopeful, more melancholic. But the published one leaves that door open for a future together, built not on illusion, but on hard-won understanding.
So looking back at the whole journey, what are the big takeaways? Dickens' main points?
Well, the critique of class is central. True gentility isn't about birth or money. It's about character. It's Joe Gargery, not Bentley Drummel or even the initial Pip.
And the theme of illusions versus reality. Pip builds his whole identity on false premises.
Absolutely. The novel is this painful process of stripping away those illusions about his benefactor, about Estella, about himself. Self-discovery is rarely easy.
The first-person narration is key too, isn't it? The older, wiser Pip looking back.
Definitely. It creates this wonderful dramatic irony. We, the readers, guided by the older Pip, see the mistakes the younger Pip is making long before he does, and the symbolism, the contrast between the darkness and decay of Saddest House and the warmth and honesty of Joe's forge. It's powerful stuff.
So ultimately, Great Expectations remains essential because it forces you to ask uncomfortable questions about your own life, right?
Yeah, I think so. Are you chasing status, the outward signs of success? Or are you focusing on building authentic connections, on loyalty, on genuine moral growth? It's a timeless meditation on what makes a life worthwhile.
A powerful reminder that true worth often lies far from the spotlight.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah.
It's about finding dignity and integrity, not just ambition.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.